if I am afraid, I would lose sight, and I would lose not only sight, vision and imagination.
Listen, we just have a minute. You were raised in a refugee camp in the occupied West Bank. You're a permanent U.S. resident. You enrolled in Columbia University to study philosophy, where you're also president of the Columbia University Buddhist Association. How has your faith and upbringing in the occupied West Bank guided your activism and your stance today?
Amy, I have to share, because of 1 minute, I have to share with you that I was attacked and other students were attacked not merely for protesting. The media has missed the point, and they started saying the pro-Palestine protest or the Palestinian movement. The movement had an actual goal, an objective, and that is divestment. Divestment, boycott, and sanctions, because this is the only way that we can bring peace and justice in a non-violent and peaceful way. And we do it with love, compassion, and empathy. And that's why the Trump administration gets so scared of people like me who organize and are still organizing, because I will not be deterred and I will not actually give up to their exhaustion tactics. The harder they come on me, the more energy and power I will have, and I will continue to work for the freedom of the Palestinian people and the right of return and equal rights and human rights for Palestinians.
Mohsen Mahdawi, graduate student at Columbia University. Thank you so much for being with us. I'm Amy Goodman.
You are tuned into KBO Portland on 90.7 FM and streaming on the web at kboo.fm.
Tune in to KBOO on Saturday, February 21st at 4 p.m. for a special Black History Month roundtable discussion on The Motif, Reimagined, a Jazz Sensibility. We welcome four amazing contributors to Portland and Multnomah County civic life in a discussion on public health, politics, and protest. Featuring Dr. Gina Gulliam, Dr. James Mason, the Honorable Saran Kopp, and the Honorable Ron Herndon. That's a special Black History Month roundtable discussion during The Motif on Saturday, February 21st at 4 p.m., here on your community radio station, KBOO Portland.
Tune in to KBOO on Tuesday, February 24th at 10 a.m. for a special remembrance of Oregon State Senator, advocate for African Americans in Portland, Oregon and beyond, educator and mental health pioneer, Avell Gordley.
We'll be taking a look back at her life, her struggles, and her advocacy. She stood on the shoulders of many as she agitated for social change. Do you have a memory of Avell Gordley? Would you like to share it? Leave us a message at 971-801-1396. That's 971-801-1396.
Tune in Tuesday, February 24th at 10 a.m. for our remembrance of Avell Gordley here on KBOO Community Radio.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on the KBOO Evening News, a City of Portland report says that Zenith Energy did not break city codes with unpermitted construction.
City Councilor Loretta Smith proposes allowing councilors to open carry guns.
And in national news, the Supreme Court strikes down President Trump's global tariffs.
Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Friday, February 20th, 2026. I'm Masato.
And I'm Robert Barncord. Controversial oil-by-rail company Zenith Energy did not break city codes, according to a city report released on Thursday. But advocates say that report may lack proper context for the issue and isn't as definitive as Mayor Keith Wilson says. Zenith Energy was fined over $300,000 by the State Department of Environmental Quality for constructing new oil pipes without a permit at its facility on the Willamette River. Portland City Council passed a resolution requiring the mayor to investigate Zenith for potential violations of their agreement with the city. The city report says Zenith didn't do anything wrong, but environmental advocates and some city councilors are skeptical. The city report was reviewed by an outside law firm before it was sent to the council and the public last night. That law firm sent a memo saying they weren't responsible for confirming if the documents in the report were accurate. That includes some 300 documents that Zenith had provided. Zenith Energy has had a number of previous infractions that were not in the background information in the report. Zenith had committed to reducing emissions every year since 2018, but they have instead increased their emissions. The company has also missed fee payments, they have defied state orders, and they have violated the city lobbying code. City Councilor Mitch Green co-sponsored the resolution to investigate Zenith. He told the Mercury, quote, "There have been persistent questions about transparency and process when it comes to the city's dealings with Zenith. Given that history and the fact that this investigation appears to have been conducted by the same city officials who oversaw the permitting in question, I will be examining these results carefully," end quote.
Portland City Councilor Loretta Smith says she wants the option to open carry a gun while conducting city business. That follows an incident at Wednesday's City Council meeting where protesters with the Revoke the Ice Permit PDX disrupted proceedings and four people were arrested for trespassing. One woman squeezed past the testimony table and stood in front of the councilor's dais holding a petition. When police came to arrest her, they pushed her close to the Councilor Smith's seat, which rattled her. She filmed some of the encounter, posting it to social media. Smith told OPB, quote, "These are not peaceful protesters. They are getting more aggressive, and it's not okay. They yelled at me. Do your job, Councilor Smith. We can't do our job because of them interrupting our meetings," end quote. The rest of the City Council meeting was held online. Portlanders are already allowed to conceal carry a gun if they have a permit, but open carry by councilors is a different story. Smith said, quote, "It's a defensive mechanism. If people know that you're a serious person and you're going to protect yourself, they're not going to be as quick to mess with you," end quote. Her proposed ordinance hasn't been reviewed by the city's legal team yet.
The Oregon Health Authority declared a measles outbreak in the state on Thursday. They've confirmed 5 cases so far, and officials say that's likely a much smaller number than the real amount. Health officials monitor wastewater across the state for evidence of infectious disease spread, and their new data dashboard shows low levels of measles virus in Lincoln, Linn, Marion, Clackamas, Multnomah, and Morrow counties. Most people are vaccinated with the measles, mumps, rubella, the MMR vaccine, at around the age of 1. Breakthrough infections are rare for people who have been vaccinated, but for those without immunity, the disease can spread rapidly. At least 4 of the confirmed cases are from patients who weren't vaccinated. Around a third of those who get measles will have complications such as ear infections, pneumonia, or brain swelling. It also weakens the immune system for some time after the infection. Now, Oregon has a statewide goal of 95% vaccination rate, but have not been able to reach that threshold. Nearly 10% of Oregon kindergartners took an exemption from the vaccine for non-medical reasons. Dr. Howard Xiao from the Health Authority said in a press conference, and I quote, "What I really want families to hear is that measles is here in Oregon. Cases are rising across the United States, and people should really reconsider their vaccine decisions and talk to their health care providers to make sure that they and their families are getting the protection that they need."
The U.S. Supreme Court strikes down President Trump's global tariffs in a 6-3 decision on Friday. The majority opinion holds that Trump did not have authority to create sweeping tariffs under the International Emergency Economic Powers Act, stealing that authority from Congress. It's a big blow to Trump's economic agenda. Trump called the six justices who ruled against him, quote, fools and lapdogs, and said they were being swayed by, quote, foreign interests. Two of his appointees, Neil Gorsuch and Amy Coney Barrett, joined the majority. The court didn't say whether Trump would be required to issue refunds for the illegally begotten tariff funds. Trump has touted that the tariffs had made billions, but those funds have largely come from American businesses and consumers, not suppliers and importers abroad. Trump signed a new 10% tariff across the board under a different act, Section 122 of the 1974 Trade Act. That allows the president to impose tariffs for 150 days, but Congress would have to help extend them. It will take effect at midnight tonight.
The mutual dislike between Democrats and Republicans is well known, but now a new poll shows that many Democrats do not like the Democratic Party. A new APNORC poll found only about 7 in 10 Democrats have a positive view of the Democratic Party itself. And despite the fact that the majority of Democrats still feel good about their party, they are much less positive than they were in the past. This lack of enthusiasm could also be a longer-term problem for the party. The APNORC polling results are consistent, regardless of Democrats' age, race, ideology, or educational background. And it's not just Democrats. Americans are not thrilled with either party right now. Roughly one quarter of Americans have a negative view of both parties. That view is especially prominent among independents and Americans under 45.
The Trump administration has announced that reviews under the National Environmental Policy Act will not be conducted for new nuclear reactor designs. Opponents say this poses a threat to the country and public safety. Eric Tegedoff has more on this story.
The Trump administration has eliminated a critical review step for experimental nuclear reactors. Critics say this undermines safety and the environment, especially at test sites like the Idaho National Laboratory. The U.S. Department of Energy has posted a notice to the Federal Register that it is excluding advanced nuclear reactors from review under the National Environmental Policy Act. The agency is accepting public comments on the new exclusion through March 4th. Edwin Lyman is Director of Nuclear Power Safety for the Union of Concerned Scientists.
None of these experimental reactors have any operating experience to point to that would be sufficient to justify a claim that you can just turn them on and they're going to be so safe that you don't have to worry. You don't have to even consider the impacts of these reactors on the environment, and that's just fantasy.
The Idaho National Lab, or INL, is hosting 5 projects testing new reactor designs, the most of any state in the country. The Trump administration has jump-started nuclear energy as part of its efforts to fast-track artificial intelligence technology and data centers. The DOE says of the change that the new categorical exclusion is based on the experience of DOE and other federal agencies, current technologies, regulatory requirements, and accepted industry practice. INL has a legacy dating back to the 1950s of testing experimental reactors, and the site was chosen because of its remote location in Idaho Falls. It's been pushing to become the site of new testing as well. However, the area is no longer as isolated as it once was. The population of Idaho Falls, where the lab is located, has more than tripled since the site opened in 1949. Lyman says there's an urgent need for INL to do more environmental analysis of the area.
By trying to bypass or avoid the hard look at the potential impacts of these federal actions, they could be endangering public health, safety, and the environment for the whole region.
Lyman says even small and low-power nuclear reactors can pose a significant environmental hazard if there's an accident, or if radioactive materials are released from its core or spent fuel. The Trump administration is pushing to have at least 3 test nuclear reactors running by July 4th. For Northern Rockies News Service, I'm Eric Tegedoff. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
President Trump gives Iran a timeline on diplomacy amid stalled nuclear talks. Americans feel the pinch of higher prices, despite Trump's assertion that tariffs are working as expected. And a former DHS official says enforcement is off the rails. With that story and more, it's Edwin J. Vieira with 2026 Talks.
Welcome to 2026 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
Iran is a hot spot right now. They have a good relationship with the representatives of Iran, and good talks are being had. It's proven to be, over the years, not easy to make a meaningful deal. We have to make a meaningful deal, otherwise bad things happen.
Following a meeting of his new Board of Peace, President Donald Trump says his representatives are making progress towards a deal on Iran's nuclear program. With a huge U.S. military buildup in the region, Trump says he wants a diplomatic solution and is giving Iran 15 days to make a deal. Military observers say an initial strike could come as early as this weekend. Previous talks deadlocked, although the Iranian government's position has been weakened by, for now, suppressed internal protests and previous military blows against its nuclear sites and regional proxies. Trump withdrew from a nuclear deal in his first term, which could be making the Iranians distrustful. Domestically, the president took his economic message to the Coosa steel plant in Rome, Georgia. Trump took a victory lap, saying the once-struggling facility shows what tariffs can accomplish, arguing construction and manufacturing jobs are growing. But new data shows the U.S. trade deficit is rising sharply, and research from Yale says the president's import taxes are costing the average household $1,700 annually. Terry Holt is with the Cost Coalition.
Whether you're a Republican like me or a Democrat, you're feeling the negative effects of the Trump policies every day, whether it's in healthcare, at the grocery store, whether it's in your small business, or whether you're volunteering at a food bank.
A new YouGov poll is confirming voters across party lines are dissatisfied with Trump's handling of the economy, and his approval on the issue is now lower than former President Joe Biden's was at the same point. Job growth increased last month, but was nearly flat last year. In fact, the U.S. lost more than 150,000 blue-collar jobs since Trump returned to power. House Minority Leader Hakeem Jeffries says the state of the economy will be a priority when Congress returns from recess next week.
We can continue to press forward to do what we have to do to lower the high cost of living in this country, to make life more affordable, to ensure people who are working hard and playing by the rules can not just survive, which is hard to do in this environment, but can thrive.
In the wake of numerous immigration sweeps, Democratic governors are highlighting the issue in their State of the State addresses. Illinois Governor J.B. Pritzker specifically criticized ICE and said the Trump administration is, quote, dripping authoritarianism bit by bit into our veins. Janet Napolitano was the Homeland Security Secretary under President Barack Obama. She says the current raids are excessive, unnecessary, and unprecedented.
We had a very strong, not only border policy, but what to do about interior enforcement within the country. And we're seeing all of those guardrails have disappeared, and then the federal government just bigfooting into states or cities.
ICE officers are now under criminal investigation for possible perjury about the shooting of a Venezuelan man in Minneapolis last month. I'm Edwin J. Vieira for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News. A brief correction to an earlier story, Trump's new tariffs are scheduled to take effect Tuesday at midnight. Stay tuned after the newscast for Counterspin, your look behind the headlines with fairness and accuracy in reporting. At 6, it's Rising Up with Sonali. Then at 7, her Ministry of Love, inside the world of activist, mentor, and DJ Celeste Carey. Tonight's weather will be cloudy with an overnight low of 34 degrees. Tomorrow's weather will be rainy with a daytime high of 48 degrees. Today in history, in 2007, the United Nations decided to observe the World Day of Social Justice each year on February 20th. It's an international day of recognizing the need to promote social justice, including efforts to tackle poverty, exclusion, gender inequality, unemployment, human rights, and social protections. The quote of the day is from American social reformer and abolitionist Frederick Douglass, who died this day in 1895. Douglass said, quote, "Power concedes nothing without a demand. It never did, and it never will."
The Washoe tribe has acquired more than 10,000 acres of land, the largest tribal land return in the Sierra Nevada mountain range. With that story and more, it's Antonia Gonzalez with National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. The Washoe Tribe has announced its acquisition of more than 10,000 acres of land north of Lake Tahoe. It marks the largest tribal land return in the Sierra Nevada and third largest in California. KUNR's Mariel Day has more.
The Washoe Tribe finalized the purchase of the land recently in partnership with organizations like the Wildlife Conservation Board. The land spans across from the northeast of Lake Tahoe and to about 20 miles north of Reno. Washoe Tribal Chairman Cyril Smokey says this is an opportunity for the tribe to revitalize their traditional practices, stewardship, and language preservation.
The Washoe people being removed from our lands, hard-fought to get every little bit back, and now we actually have something to call ours.
Although the preserve is the first under the Washoe Land Trust, they hope to acquire more of the Washoe homelands. In the meantime, Smokey hopes to start restoring the land and focus on conserving the wildlife and its natural resources, while ensuring it's a safe place for everyone. For National Native News, I'm Mariel Day.
Super Bowl halftime headliner Bad Bunny recently won 3 Grammys, including Album of the Year. One of his songs explores colonization of his homeland and Hawaii. HPR's Cassie Ordonio spoke with Hawaiians and Puerto Ricans last year about the similarities between the islands.
That's Bad Bunny's song, Lo Que La Paso a Hawaii. It translates to What Happened to Hawaii. Many locals say it highlights stark similarities and is a reminder of the island's colonial past. Daniel Kawilamahi is a native Hawaiian artist. He interpreted the song as Bad Bunny protecting his homeland by taking a political stance against statehood. Puerto Rico became a U.S. territory in 1898, 6 years after the overthrow of the Hawaiian kingdom. Mahi underscored that native Hawaiian musicians have been raising issues of over-tourism and sovereignty rights. These artists include, but are not limited to, Sudden Rush and Brada Is. Visit all these islands and saw everything. How would they feel about the changes of our land?
Part of this broader conversation is how Kanaka Maoli and Latino culture have been in conversation through music since Paniolo came to Hawaii. And our sounds have influenced each other for a lot longer than people think.
Angel Santiago Cruz is a 69-year-old Puerto Rican who has lived in Hawaii for about 40 years. He joined the U.S. Army with a guarantee to be stationed in Hawaii. He wanted to see what statehood looks like.
What are you going to lose?
One lyric that stood out to him was to never forget the lelolai. Santiago Cruz says it's an expression from the jíbaro, which is a person who is connected to the land.
When the Hawaiians say ea, that's an expression from New Hawaiianness, that's connection to the island. Yeah, it's pride, it's everything. Lelolai is the same.
For National Native News, I'm Cassie Ordonio.
The National Native American Boarding School Healing Coalition will be at the Denver Indian Center next week, gathering video interviews for its oral history project. It's part of an effort to document, acknowledge, and reckon with the experiences of boarding school survivors. The event in Colorado marks the project's 18th stop nationwide. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
A recent ruling from an administrative judge upholds permits in Wisconsin for Enbridge's Line 5 pipeline reroute. A lawyer for the Bad River Band says it's part of a growing political trend focused on removing environmental protections. He says the fight reflects a broader effort to protect tribal sovereignty and environmental resources from an oil industry expansion. Judith Rees Branch has the details.
A Wisconsin attorney is calling out government officials for continuing to shrink in the face of conglomerate oil companies like Enbridge. Last week, an administrative law judge upheld the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources' approval of the company's Line 5 reroute project. Environmental and tribal advocates argue a section of the pipeline has been operating illegally on the Bad River Reservation for more than a decade. John Petoskey with Earth Justice is one of the attorneys representing the Bad River Band. He says the significance of the effect affected area can't be overstated, and decisions like these continue to endanger important public rights and resources.
Nobody is standing up against Enbridge in the way that they should. This is part of a broader trend at reducing environmental quality, eliminating protections for health and welfare for profit.
Petoskey says the band plans to appeal the decision and seek a court-ordered stay to stop construction. Enbridge argues the ruling validates that the DNR conducted a thorough review of the project and correctly issued the necessary permits. Despite ongoing hurdles since the pipeline was built in 1953, Petoskey emphasizes the band has remained resilient in their resolve. They have been actively fighting the project through multiple legal avenues, including contested case proceedings and federal court actions.
Throughout that time, there have been ebbs and flows in the ability of the band to have a say in how it's going to live its life. I'm part of a bigger movement here toward sustainability, toward giving power back to people, but we're still fighting.
Even though the latest ruling ultimately favored Enbridge, Administrative Law Judge Angela Chappett Foy did order four modifications to the firm's wetlands permit, including monitoring of wetland restoration after construction. For Wisconsin News Connection, I'm Judith Ruiz Branch.
Using living materials like fungus or bacteria in building construction could help lower carbon emissions. It could make buildings more resilient and introduce new functions such as self-repair, water filtration, and carbon capture. Researchers at the University of Washington are highlighting their work at an exhibition this month featuring living building materials. KBOO's Eden Selman has more on the story.
Researchers at the University of Washington are using engineered living materials to rethink how buildings are made and how they perform in a changing climate. Scientists are embedding organisms like fungus and bacteria into building materials. They'll provide structure while also doing things like capturing carbon or filtering wastewater. Researcher Al-Shakim Nelson with the University of Washington says construction is responsible for about 40% of global greenhouse gas emissions. The goal is to create renewable replacements.
We potentially could have a building that would be producing its own anti-corrosive coatings or could actually capture CO2 instead of emit CO2, could potentially self-heal, all due to the actions of the microorganisms that reside within these materials.
Students at the university are showing how they're using 3D printing with water-based resin to scale up this technology at a public showcase this month called Engineered Living Materials for the Built Environment. The projects include living walls that can consume waste oil to create biofuels or generate heat for buildings. Nelson explains that as humans, we already have relationships with many helpful microorganisms like bacteria and fungi. He says this research is taking those relationships to the next level and hopes that visitors will find more than just inspiration.
But then maybe even come up with some of their own ideas of what could be done if we integrate these types of organisms into the built environment.
Along with the work from the University of Washington, the exhibit also features research from the University of Texas at Austin and the University of California, Davis. For KBOO News and the Public News Service, I'm Eden Selman.
During American Heart Month, young people across Washington are sharing their personal stories about congenital heart disease. Structure issues present at birth that affect about one in every 100 people. One young Washingtonian now serves as a youth heart ambassador for the American Heart Association, speaking at schools about her journey to raise money for research. Isabel Charlie reports.
February is American Heart Month, and young people across Washington are sharing their journeys with congenital heart disease to spread awareness and hope. Congenital heart disease refers to structural heart problems people are born with, which affect about one in every 100 people. Among them is Hazel Hupp, a Wenatchee third grader born with a narrow aorta who underwent her first heart procedure before she was 1 week old. This school year, Hupp is serving as a youth heart ambassador with the American Heart Association, speaking at schools about her experience.
The reason why I'm doing it is to help raise money for scientists to make better technology to help kids with their heart surgery, just like I did. It's just the whole point of it.
After several procedures, including open heart surgery, Hupp now enjoys an active life and says she loves to play softball and golf. While CHD is the most common birth defect, advancements in research and treatment have dropped the death rate by 40% in the last 25 years. Congenital heart disease can range from holes in the heart to complex, life-threatening conditions, all caused by improper heart development during pregnancy. Dr. Nefti Sandeep at Mary Bridge Children's Hospital in Tacoma says this month is important because when most people think of heart disease, they think of adults.
But it's also important for others to realize that roughly 1% of all births in the United States, which comes out to approximately 40,000 babies every year, is born with some sort of congenital heart defect.
Sandeep says the heart is able to heal itself from some forms of CHD and others can be addressed with medication, but many kinds require surgery. While most CHD is diagnosed when kids are young, some people have structural heart problems they may not find until adulthood. Sandeep advises everyone to get regular doctor visits to check on your heart and take any heart-related symptoms seriously. I'm Isabel Charlet, Washington News Service.
You are listening to the KBOO Evening News for Friday, February 20th, 2026. This is a volunteer-produced newscast. We encourage your participation. You can call or text us with your breaking news stories and tips at 971-801-1378. Our production team for tonight's newscast includes Josh Salem and Aiden Selman. The producer and engineer is Althea Billings. Special thanks to Isabel Charlet, Eric Dekadoff, Edward J. Vieira, and Antonio Gonzalez. The director of Evening News is Althea Billings. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 90.9 FM. I'm Robert Barncord.
And I'm Masato. All of our KBOO programs, including the Evening News, are supported by our members. If you would like to become a member and support our programming, you can go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321. Stay tuned now for Counterspin.